As we move from the KSRO greenhouse over to the KSRO kitchen, I say good morning to Chef John Ash.
Hey, Steve Garner. How are you?
Very well. How are you?
Good. Good.
Nice to see you this morning.
Yeah, great to see you, too.
32 years in the KSRO kitchen, and our hands have the burn marks.
I know, and we have no eyebrows and all of that kind of stuff.
Everything's been singed. Everything's been singed. So we have a lively show, this pre-July 4th show for you this morning. We'll introduce our special guest in just a few minutes, who's joining us from the Wine Spectator. But a few things we want to call to your attention, and that is, first of all, a really wonderful dinner in San Francisco at the Salt House, acclaimed San Francisco restaurant. Salt House is teaming up with lauded culinary bookshop Omnivore Books to co-present an exclusive one-night-only dinner on July 12th with London's award-winning chefs Sarit Packer and Itamar Swilovich, to celebrate the U.S. release of their latest cookbook, Honey and Company at Home, Middle Eastern Recipes from Our Kitchen. And the Rosenthal brothers, along with their chef de cuisine, will be presenting a four-course dinner featuring recipes from Honey and Company. So, John, look at this this menu they're having, the past appetizers, tinned tuna cakes, potato and feta fritters, hedgehog meatballs, fried cauliflower with amba sauce, a tahini sauce.
What is that?
That's just the appetizers.
Yeah.
And then the first course, family style, Romanian white eggplant dip, silky green eggplant puree, zaluk. I'm not sure what zaluk is, and Jerusalem sesame bread. Second course, pickled peach salad. Mm. That sounds like something you would have done at the Dry Creek Peach.
Maybe I'll steal that idea.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Third course is lamb tagine with runner beans and tomatoes. And then fourth course is a strawberry ricotta cake, honey and spice cookie. So you can call directly to the restaurant and to the Salt House and participate in this dinner, which is Friday, July 12th, and it should be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And the reason we mention this is because both Sarit and Itamar are coming up to the show next Saturday, July 13th, to sit in with us and talk about their award-winning books, Honey and Company. Actually, their first book, the Honey and Company Cookbook, won Cookbook of the Year from the Sunday London Times. This is a big award. Plus Fortnum and Mason's Food and Drink Awards, Cookery Book of the Year, and the Guild of Food Writers Award winner for Best First Book. So these cookbooks are pretty extraordinary.
Yeah.
So
maybe they'll bring us some of those tin tuna cakes.
Well,
which I would be really interested in, because why not? We think we always have to make cakes with fresh tuna. It's like, open the can.
Why not?
Yeah.
Well, I will email them after the show today and say, if there's anybody that didn't show on the dinner July 12th, bring up what you can for us to take in the studio next Saturday.
That
so that's a Salt House. And we had the pleasure of the Rosenthal Brothers Company a year or so ago. They came up and chatted with us. So it should be a great dinner.
Yeah.
So that's the Salt House if you're interested in that dinner on July 12th. Okay, take care of that. You sent me the updated seafood watch from the Monterey Bay Aquarium.
Yes.
And this was really interesting. They have the best choices, the good alternatives, and then in red, the ones to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
And why don't we start? I just want to talk to you about the ones to avoid.
Yeah.
There's so many of the ones that I like that are on the avoid list.
Well, but you have to read carefully because there are species there that most of these depend on either how they're caught or the fishery that they come from. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, here's let's look at the avoid list. Now, bassa, we know, is farm raised in like Thailand and Vietnam, and that's not a good choice. What about halibut? Atlantic is one to avoid, but what about California halibut?
Well, California halibut and Alaskan halibut are perfectly fine. They are sustainable. The problem on the East Coast is that they've just overfished it.
So that's the one to avoid.
Yeah.
But California and Alaska are good choices.
Absolutely.
Now, here's one. It says octopus, other imported sources. Don't we see a lot of octopus on restaurant menus?
Yeah, and a lot of it comes from kind of dubious sources in the Southeast Asia and things like that. And again, it also is a question of overfishing. You know, they're just.
But we have California octopus,
which is fine.
So that's the one, that's fine.
It's, yeah.
And now there's a lot of salmon to avoid. Yeah. Salmon, Canadian Atlantic, Chilean, Norwegian, Scotland. Is that all the farmed salmon?
Well, it's interesting because if you look under good alternatives and also under best choices, there's farmed salmon there. So it again is country of origin where it comes from.
Okay.
So it requires that we ask questions. You know, when somebody says, oh, we've got salmon from blah, 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 it's the ones to avoid we should avoid.
Okay. So it's not all salmon. It's specific ones. Sardines, it says to avoid. Now, again, Atlantic sardines. Shrimp, other imported sources. So Gulf Coast shrimp, locally.
So here's the story. Shrimp. Buy American, either wild caught or farm raised, because we have all kinds of things in place to both not overfish the wild and to grow the farm raised ones sustainably and wholesomely. So that's just a good rule of thumb if you're going to buy shrimp.
And then one of the most confusing categories is tuna, and they have albacore, bluefin, skipjack, and yellowfin. We should avoid. Let's see, imported, avoid. And then on the ones best choices, the ones that are trawled and pole and line caught, they're fine.
Yeah. So what that means when pole caught is you catch one fish at a time. You don't go, you know, take a big net or a big drag device and, you know, churn up the bottom and take everything so that there's lots of bycatch. The other issue is with tuna, unfortunately, is most of it is overfished. They're trying to, actually in Hawaii, trying to farm raise it, but the problem with their system is that they go out and catch little wild ones and bring them to the farm, so it kind of decimates the wild population.
So if we want a tuna fish sandwich, are there some canned tunas that are good?
Oh, there are three or four that are terrific. And their Wild Planet is one of those. Oh. You can buy it at Costco. But they're both caught properly and all of that stuff. And they don't decimate the population. Like, their albacore tuna is absolutely delicious.
Okay.
And it's green.
And it will say that on the can,
yes,
so we can make an informed decision.
Yeah, yeah.
Other best choices, right at the top, is one of your all-time favorite fish, and that's Arctic char.
And it's all farmed. So there isn't Arctic char that is taken from the wild, but it's all farmed. But they figured out how to do it. So it's the perfect substitute for salmon. I mean, if you're concerned about salmon, because it's part of the salmonoid family, has pink flesh, really delicious, delicate in flavor. So it's great. But it all comes from farms, which is interesting.
Another best choice is U.S. farmed catfish.
Yeah.
And we're both big fans of catfish.
Yeah. Yeah. And isn't it awful that we don't see more of it here?
Not out here on the West Coast.
No.
You don't see it.
But where you grew up, it was that was the daily.
The fish du jour.
Yeah.
We also have oysters on the best list, farmed and Canadian.
Yeah. Well,
that's good news. Rockfish is on there. And here's an article from the Press Democrat from May of this year. Black cod, the best fish you've never heard of, and that was written by you with all kinds of great recipes. That's on a best choice list.
Yeah.
And black cod is known as sable fish
or butterfish is its two other names.
So this is great, and you can download this list. Just go to the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch, basically.
Yes, yeah, go to Seafood Watch, and you can. The app is free, and so anytime you're out in a market or in a restaurant and you're thinking, should I be ordering this? You know, that. And what it does is it also sets you up to ask the proper questions. Like, so farm salmon, it turns out now that farm salmon isn't all bad. There are some good producers of it. But then you put them on the spot and sort of say, is this one of those producers? You know, that
ask the question.
Yeah, ask the question.
Coming up is, of course, July 4th, this Thursday.
Yeah.
And right in time for that is Perfect Burgers with John Ash, that's going to be appearing in this Wednesday's Press Democrat food section.
Yeah.
And this is a wonderful article. You sent me the advance copy.
Yeah.
Look at that sexy photo of that burger.
Delicious.
Man, it's so mouthwatering.
And we'll have to ask Tim about wines with burgers. Huh?
Six secrets for it. We'll give you a little preview of this article. Six secrets for a great grilled beef burger. What's the ideal ratio of fat?
You know, it's 80 to 85% lean to 15 to 20% fat.
Okay. Season before?
Yes.
Season the meat before cooking?
Yeah, yeah.
Room temperature or cold?
Well, you can do it either way. I sometimes, because I love burgers when it's really good beef and all of that, I love to put them on cold because it takes longer for the heat to penetrate so that I'm assured of a really rare center.
What about flipping? How often do you
flip? Stop it. Don't flip. Don't touch it. Just let it go. You know, let it cook on one side, turn it over, let it cook on the other side. But, you know, all of us were guilty of this. It's like we have to keep fussing. Men are the worst. They keep fussing, turning. And the worst thing is they take a spatula and press on it and, of course, press all the lovely juices out and all.
But as you
don't
mentioned,
do that.
But as you mentioned, pressing, before putting that burger on, we're supposed to do a little indentation.
In the center, because as the meat shrinks, the center becomes thicker, so it doesn't cook as evenly. But if you put a little divot in the center before you put it on the grill or in a grill pan or something like that, it will be evenly
cooked. Other variations, you have a mushroom, a blue cheese burger, and a green chili and jack cheese recipe, and then grinding your own meat. Do you grind your own?
Sometimes. When you get, if you're concerned about what you're getting in the market, we're lucky that we have good markets here who grind things. And you can also ask them to take a piece of meat, like chuck and all that stuff, and grind it for you right there. And they'll
actually do that.
Yeah.
I've never asked the butcher
won't, then don't go
somewhere
back.
Else. You also have a recipe for a fresh tuna burger. Speaking of tuna, which we just did, get a tuna steak and you can grind that up.
Or chop it up.
Chop it up, even better than grinding.
Yeah.
With a spicy Southeast Asian sauce. There's also salmon burgers with green goddess dressing.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that idea. And that's with some spicy arugula that you add to that salmon burger. And you have some that are diced and some chopped for the salmon.
Yeah, I made the point that in my early restaurant days here in Sonoma County, we would, you know, we served a lot of salmon and we would get it whole, obviously, and cut it up. And so you'd always end up with little bits and pieces
trim.
Of things. Trim. Yes. And so the idea here is have some of it a little coarser and some of it a little finer so that it isn't just this, the texture is much more interesting that way.
Black bean veggie burger with tomatillo and avocado
sauce. So it's kind of oxymoronic to call anything vegetable or burger because by definition, burger is meat, is beef, but what the heck.
You have a turkey burger recipe, and that uses dark meat from the legs and thighs. And do you prefer pan or grill for your turkey burger?
You know, either is fine. I think if you have a grill pan, mm-hmm. I think that's the best alternative of all.
And then you serve that with a cucumber and yogurt sauce. And the final one is, I love this, only you would write it this way, soft, squishy burger buns.
Yes, you should make your own. It's so simple. And the whole idea is that's what we love about it, because when you're eating it, it kind of soaks up all the juices and gets compressed, and it's the best.
And look at the sexy photo.
Yeah, isn't that good?
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
So look for that in this Wednesday's Press Democrat. John Ash, Perfect Burgers. And to pair, I'm wondering what wine we might pair with that. Well, we have a guy in the KS Arto Kitchen that can answer some of those questions, and we'll meet him when we return. This is the Good Food Hour with Chef John Ash and me, Steve Garner.
Sonoma County's local news, weather, and traffic station, FM News Talk, KSRO, 103.5, 94.5.
Hi, it's Jeff Davis of On the Wine Road for Smothers European Volvo Cars. If class is what you're seeking with your next vehicle, the 2018 Volvo S90 T6 all-wheel drive will elevate your appearance nicely, yet will save you a bundle right now. Smothers is offering this 2018 S90 at $22,500 off MSRP. That's right. So on a 36-month lease, you pay only $499 a month with $5,000 out of pocket. The S90 is 4.5 inches longer than comparable sedans, creating extra legroom, and it comes with a supercharged and turbocharged inline 4. That pumps it up to 316 horsepower. Test drive the new 2018 Volvo S90 T6 all-wheel drive, but do it soon with $22,500 off MSRP. It won't be hanging around long. Smothers European Volvo Cars, a family-owned business since 1982 on the Corby Auto Row and Smothers European Volvo Cars.
Dr. Tom's work is truly world-class.
Introducing another grateful client of Dr. Walter Tom's Aesthetic Laser and Vein Center in Santa Rosa.
I'm a flight attendant, and believe me, when it comes to plastic surgery, I have seen it all. Luckily, my friend told me about Dr. Tom's website. I took a look soon after I met him. I was immediately taken by his warm and authentic demeanor. I love that he only uses local anesthesia. That made all the difference to me. I decided on two procedures, breast augmentation and Botox. Now, whenever my girlfriends see me in a bathing suit, the first thing they ask me, after they tell me how amazing I look, is where did you go? I want that. My answer? Dr. Walter Tom in Santa Rosa. He and his staff are the best the world over, and I've been all over the world.
For your free consultation with Dr. Tom, please call 542-8346. That's 542-8346.
Look younger by Monday.
Call 542-8346 or visit Dr. Tom's Aesthetic Laser and Vein Center on Stony Point Road in Santa Rosa or online at laserandvein.com.
Keep cool this summer. For a limited time, Ongrow & Sons is offering an AC tune-up Freon check and charge that includes up to 1 pound of Freon, regularly priced at $249, for just $49. Tuning up your AC will enhance your home comfort, help minimize repair and operating costs, and increase the life expectancy of your system.
Hello, friends. This is Ernie Ongrow. Along with my brother, Paul, and cousins, Dean and Mitch, we own and operate Ongrow & Sons Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling. We're a family business opened in 1932 by our grandfather. It's always been a big part of our lives. Just like our parents before us, we grew up around the shop, getting our hands dirty, learning the value of hard work, and giving our customers the very best. Whether you need maintenance, a repair, or want to update your system, remember, Ongrow & Sons, we're always here for you.
To schedule a $49 AC tune-up free on check and charge, visit OngrowAndSons.com or call 579-3511. Ongrow & Sons Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling, a modern company since 1932.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
Tim Fish, senior editor for the Wine Spectator, a tasting beat is California, Oregon, Washington, and U.S. sparkling wine. Senior editor Tim joined the Spectator in 2001, based in Wine Spectator's Napa, California office. Lead taster for Oregon, Washington, California, Zinfandel, and Rhone style reds and U.S. sparkling wines. Promoted to senior editor in 2013. Also assists with news and feature coverage for WineSpectator.com. Prior to joining Wine Spectator, he worked for 20 years in newspapers, magazines. Some of you remember his long tenure in the Santa Rosa Press Democrat.
So can I mention Steve Garner? Say, where's that from? It was an article that you did on Burger Wines, I think. But what date was that? I can't believe you know, it was a pack rat.
It's in my file. This was from Joe. Hi, Tim. First of all, I should say hi, Tim.
Hi.
And Tim was with us. Actually, we talked about sparkling wines with Tim back in December 2018, before the holidays, about some good sparkling ideas. And we thought, gee, it's June, July. It's burger time. Why not have Tim back? And then I remembered 22 years ago, in late June, early July, 1997, I was part of the Press Democrat tasting room where we tasted wines that we thought would go great with burgers. Do you remember that far back, Tim?
Oh, I do. That was my first hamburger tasting. I did that for several years.
And the one that won the tasting, and I have the article, was M.G. Vallejo's 1995 Pinot Noir. And it was a really good wine. Mm.
That was a tasty little wine for its day and its price. It's a label that's gone now. I wonder where the juice is going.
Yeah.
It was $6 back then. And let me just mention a couple excerpts from that article. Bottles were wrapped in brown bags. The judges included Bob Cavral from Hartford Court Winery.
That was where he was there. But that was before he was at Williams Hill.
And Betsy Fisher, who's now at the EJC, but she was with Restaurant Association of the Redwood Empire, and me, and a few other folks. And it said the clear winner was the MG Vallejo 95 Pinot Noir. They know how to make a good, cheap Pinot Noir, which is no easy feat. And we're talking 22 years ago.
Yeah, cheap now would be 20, you know, and that would be really cheap.
Now, here's something interesting, which I had forgotten from the article. Garner brought along one of his favorite barbecue reds, and we stashed it in a brown bag, and it scored really well. Garner brought the Trenadue 1994 Carignan.
Oh.
Now, what did we taste last week, John, at the Sonoma Marin Fair?
Yeah, we tasted Carignan.
We tasted Carol Shelton's.
She does a good one.
Which was the red winner.
Sweepstakes and best red wine. Yeah. It was her 2015 Oat Valley Carignan, Old Vine Carignan from Alexander Valley. And on the show last week, we talked about, gosh, it's still an overlooked varietal and how much I really enjoyed it. And here I'm looking. I loved this varietal 22 years ago.
So isn't it true? There used to be a lot of Carignan planted.
There was, and there was a lot of Carignan and a lot of Petit Syrah. Wow. I mean, for years, they were the blend. You would just use them in blends. Few people bottled them individually. Well, Petit Syrah they did, but few people bottled Carignan, but they were in all the field blends and all the hearty reds. And I think went into some of the Gallo, Zins years ago. Yeah. And I think they used to process a lot of that.
Well, she did blend it with a tiny bit of Zinfandel and Petit Syrah and a little bit of Alicante Boucher to round it out. Yeah. And wasn't it delicious?
It was delicious. It was surprising. So will it ever make a comeback, do you think, or not?
Well, interesting. The Chronicle just wrote a story about Carignan last week, I think it was. So maybe. I don't see very many, so I don't know really how to judge them. You know?
From the 1997 article, rounding out the top five were the Fetzer Vineyards 1996 Gamay Beaujolais. Now, this was during your tenure at Fetzer. Yeah,
yeah. Was that when they were still doing the Nouveau sort of thing?
Yeah. It was that whole berry. So it was so juicy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Fruit bombs.
There's a fruit bomb, and it says a fun wine to drink, has a highly floral aroma and juicy strawberry flavors. And you said better alone than with the burger. So it really stood out on its own, which was nice. And you go on to write, Tim, fun is the best way to describe all of these wines. They won't knock your socks off, but most of us don't wear socks on the 4th of July anyway.
Yeah. Did I really write that? Yeah. Oh, I don't remember that at all.
That's great. You're so lyrical, you know.
So it was fun to be able to retrieve this article from 22 years ago.
So the other thing about it is, I mean, I know that was a long, over 20 years ago, so prices were inexpensive then, but I think I've always admired that it's easy sometimes to review very expensive wines, you know, that most people can't afford or can't get for one reason or another. And I've always liked the idea that you're looking for those things that the common man can.
Yeah, I think, I love the great stuff too. I mean, and I drink a lot of good wine because of my job, but it's like I grew up as a newspaper man, blue collar as a kid, and I always just thought if I could find, whenever I find a great value, I find that more exciting really than tasting almost anything else. It's like, wow, what a great find.
So are there more of them today than there used to be?
It depends on the the vintage. I mean, we've had some big vintages and we've had some small vintages. Here, for example, I just tasted a bunch of inexpensive Oregon Pinots, and they were quite good. And I suspect that a lot of it had to do with it was a fairly big crop this year, and they just had all this extra juice, and people are finding creative ways to use it.
Because, is that going to be in an upcoming Spectator article?
It's not a specific article, but it'll certainly be maybe something on the web I write about or something like that. We don't call them blogs anymore. Blogs are...
give yourself away.
Well, blogs are sort of dead, you know. I mean, the whole concept of a blog, they still exist, but they just don't use that name so much anymore.
What do they use now?
You know, we've been fighting with that. It's like I refer to them jokingly in-house as those things formerly called blogs.
Yeah, that's funny.
So when you say inexpensive, what price range are you talking about?
Well, these days, I mean, you know, if I... one of the Oregon Pinots was 15, and it was okay. I wouldn't recommend it, but there were a couple in the $22 range, and Oregon Pinots tend to run rather expensive if they're from Willamette Valley, for example, as opposed to like an Oregon State Pinot Noir. So if you know, it depends on the varietal. I mean, I think you can still get some very good Zins for $10-$12, and occasionally cheaper than that. It depends on the vintage.
So can you name a couple of your favorite of the Zins?
Oh, well, I have some, right? The cheaper Zins?
Yeah.
No, are you talking California Zins?
That would probably be about the only place that does it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you'll find there's some planted in Washington, of course, in other parts of the world. They don't call it Zinfandel, but here's a really good one. A good inexpensive Zinfandel I really liked is the Kirkland Ranch that sells at Costco. And it's a Sonoma County Old Vine 2016. And it's a very nice wine. And I forget the price, but it's less than, I think it's around 20 or less.
So at Kirkland is the Costco brand, isn't it?
And they do an excellent job of creating their own brands. Yeah. And they're not all, they don't all blow your socks off. But I would say two-thirds of the time they deliver. Mm. And they have a very extensive wine program there. The other is the St. Francis Sonoma County Old Vines. That's always a good value. They do a good job with that. And the 16 is quite good. And then one of my go-to wines for still moderately priced is the Dry Creek Heritage Vine, just their basic Zinfandel. And the 17 is, I gave it a 91 points.
Wow.
It's a really nice Zin. And their Zinfandels have just slowly, sorry about that, their Zinfandels have just slowly gone from very good to even better and better.
And this is the Dry Creek?
Dry Creek.
2017.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because we had Katie Madigan on the show a couple of weeks ago, who won Best Red of the Press Democrat tasting for her St. Francis Zinfandel. Great, great Zinfandel.
Oh, yeah. What vineyard was it? I forget now,
it was not the general release Zinfandel.
It'll come to me.
Yeah.
But as soon as I get off the air.
Yeah.
It was suggested retail, I think, $48. Yeah. So they have a broad portfolio of Zinfandels at St. Francis.
And I think
it was the Silva Vineyards.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Named after Chris?
No, it had nothing to do with Chris.
Oh, really?
Silva. It was a different family, but it was from the Silva Vineyards, and it was outstanding.
Yeah.
Really great Zinfandel.
Yeah.
So good bargains in Zinfandel. Occasionally bargains in Pinot Noir, but less so.
Yeah.
And even less so from Oregon, probably.
I don't review Merlot anymore, and they're harder and harder to find good value Merlot because they're...
So I have a little chart here for you.
Yes.
This is the most popular wines in the world.
I saw that Dave wrote this.
It's being updated now. But number one is
Cabernet.
And what's still number two?
Merlot.
Merlot's still up
and
there.
And Chardonnay's way down the list, which is interesting.
What is this third one? Oh, it's a Spanish wine. Tempranillo, that's obvious because that's from Spain, you know.
Yeah.
But Chardonnay is way down. Pinot Noir is lower than I thought.
Yeah, bigger. Yeah. Isn't that
so worldwide, quite different than our California drinking trends, So number one's Cabernet and second is Merlot. Chardonnay's way down the list, as is Pinot Noir. Tempranillo, aren't there like more acreage of Tempranillo grown in anywhere in the world or something
Most
like that?
Most of it's in Spain.
In Spain.
Yeah. Yeah, Rioja, that's the grape of Rioja.
Yeah, it's number four on the list.
And Grenache is lower than I thought because it's grown all over the place.
Yeah.
We'll take a break. We'll come back and we'll chat with Tim Fish from the Wine Spectator about some great ideas for July 4th wines. We'll also tackle canned wines. I had a great conversation with winemaker Alan Green, who's putting on the first ever international canned wine competition. We'll tell you about that when we return. It's the KSRO Good Food Hour with Chef John Ash and me, Steve Garner.
Join the switch to crystal clear KSRO FM, 103.5 Santa Rosa, Windsor, 94.5 Petaluma. Hear the difference.
This is George Adair with Cross Country Mortgage. If you're in the market to buy a home, this message is for you. My team and I are experts at providing hands-on assistance to getting your home financing done fast and with confidence. In fact, we're closing purchase loans in as fast as 10 days on many of the programs we offer. The best part is our pre-approved buyers don't need a loan contingency in making their offer. That makes buyers look as good as cash. If you're applying for a home loan at your bank, ask them if they can close in 10 days with no loan contingency. I promise they can't. When you're buying a home, speed to close and a true loan approval are necessary to win the offer. How do we do it? Cross Country is a direct lender with amazing technology, experience, and a local presence. Our process is proven to help buyers win in this competitive housing market. If you're ready for a great lending experience, call 707-583-8100. That's 707-583-8100. or visit GeorgiaDare.com. That's GeorgiaDare.com.
Cross Country Mortgage, NMLS ID 2039, and Georgia Dare, NMLS ID 245370. Equal housing lender, subject to credit approval.
In observance of Independence Day, Party on the Plaza Music Series at the Roner Park Farmers Market is closed. We'll be back Friday, July 12th from 5 to 8 with the Certified Farmers Market, food and craft booths, beer and wine, and live music. July 12th, it's the Soul Section playing funk, soul, and R&B.
It's all in City Center Plaza in Roner Park in partnership with the City of Roner Park and sponsored by Paradise Pet Resorts in Roner Park and Santa Rosa, offering doggy daycare, dog, cat, and small animal boarding, grooming, and obedience training too. Open till 7 every day of the year. No one loves your pets like you do, but nobody cares for your pets like they do at Paradise Pet Resort.
The market is closed for Independence Day, July 5th, but back Friday, July 12th with the Soul Section. Info on the Party in the Plaza Facebook page.
It's Paradise Pet Resorts.
Hello, Stan Klaus of Crandall Roofing here with great news for Sonoma County. No doubt many of you have heard that construction is booming in our area, and as a result, wait times for reputable contractors have grown to months or even years. Well, I'm happy to report that Crandall Roofing has been able to add to and restructure our personnel to reduce our wait times for residential re-roofs to weeks, not months. That's right, wait times at Crandall Roofing have been reduced to weeks, not months. So even though construction is backed up in Sonoma County, you can still have a factory-trained, Diamond-certified company with thousands of satisfied customers install your roof. To get the process started, just give Crandall Roofing a call at 586-2500. That's 586-2500, or find us on the web at crandallroofing.com.
Over 5,500 people in the Greater Bay Area have trusted the re-roofing of their home to Crandall Roofing. Shouldn't you? Call 586-2500.
With Sonoma County's most accurate, most dependable forecast, here's Daniel Trucios on the KSRO Weather Watch.
Jeff Woodworth filling in for Daniel Trucios. Mostly sunny skies and wind gusts around 15 to 20 miles per hour will give us a daytime high around 80, 65 on the coast. Later tonight, we can look for a few clouds and intermittent breezes to leave us with an overnight low around 49 degrees. The warming continues through Tuesday. Depend on weather every 30 minutes on FM News Talk 103.5 and 94.5 KSRO.
Spending some quality time with Tim Fish, senior editor of the Wine Spectator. I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash. What's the deal with natural wine?
Well, natural. So this was part of an article that actually was published just this morning in the Washington Post by Dave McIntyre. And the title of it is The Fault in the Glass, How Imperfections Can Enhance Some Wines and Even Make Them Memorable. How do you feel about that? Because if you go to UC Davis, you know, imperfections right. that's such a no-no.
Right. Well, I mean, that sort of thinking, to some extent, it's still true, but it's not as black and white as it used to be. I mean, there are old wine tasters, if they would pick up any sense of bread at all, it was flawed wine, we throw it out. Now, I think it has to do with how strong of an impact it's going to be. But that still remains in doubt what's going to happen to the wine mm-hmm. later, because that Brett's going to continue to be a part of it. Is it going to get worse?
So explain what Brett is.
Well, it's basically a spoilage part of the yeast, and it smells variously and tastes to a degree. Variously anywhere from horse dung to leather and all sorts of anywhere in between. Barnyard is often a descriptor. For me, the aromatics are a big part of it. But once you when you taste a bready wine, the texture changes for one after a certain level. And everyone that's the problem with Brett is that everyone has a different tolerance for it, just like sugar. Mm-hmm. volatile acidity, things like that. Other people have different tolerances to it. So when I start feeling like it's marred the flavors and hurt the texture, and I start worrying where this wine's going to go, I knock it down. But I try to be open-minded, I guess, is the right way to look at it.
You know, I'll mention this. Steve and I, years ago, hooked up at Ballymaloe in Ireland, and Timmy, the husband there, I'll never forget, he had this glint in his eye, and he looked at us and said, well, we like a little Brett in our wine. And, you know, and it was that. And I guess it's what you get used to, too.
Well, they're putting Brett in beer. I mean,
yeah.
So it's like, okay.
Well, one person's defect is defects another attribute in a wine.
Right. So, well, I would say most of the wines now are very clean. Mm-hmm. I get very few wines with Brett or flaws in it, as opposed to 25, 30 years ago. A lot more prevalent. Mm-hmm. The choice is, do you want to, how much is personality, and is what, as you said, one person's character is another person's flaw.
Well, he mentions in this article Chateau Moussar in Lebanon, which has become such a cult wine among people. And I guess that has a lot of breadth, you know, right, which is what distinguishes
well,
it.
Well, yeah, there's the Chateau Beaucastel for years had a very big, from Chateau Neuf de Pape, had a very big Brett element, and they have cleaned it up, and I think some people are disappointed. Mm-hmm.
It all depends what you like. Mm-hmm. And isn't there the Natural Wine Alliance?
Yeah. There was. Think there is. I'm not sure. It's very personal. One person's. They seem to argue more than Democrats about natural or not.
So does that fall into the whole wild yeast discussion, or is that kind of a different thing?
It's kind of a different thing, but I think that there are yeasts that probably would help make your wine more natural, let's put it that way. But the wild yeast, wild yeast is pretty prevalent now in the industry. A lot of people to use it.
Aren't you taking a chance?
Well, typically what happens is if you harvest from the same sources and you make in the same place, is a handful of yeasts will be dominant, typically. And you get used to working with those, and that's what becomes the wild yeast. And it may not be wild, really. It may have come from some other source, but it has become, you just inoculated. The word they're using now is uninoculated by yeast.
So what's new in packaging? Well, this is an interesting topic because canned wines have increased 45%, Tim, this past year as far as sales. So what used to be, remember when screw caps came out? And everyone said, there's no way, I will never, right? And remember packaged wines on tap.
Box wines. Yeah.
Box wines. Yeah. Everyone said, no way. Well, look how much traction box wines and screw caps are ubiquitous, right?
Well, they're like, it's amazing. And they have, especially with millennials.
Yes, millennials is.
But what about the romance of the cork?
I'm sure there are plenty of millennials who still want the romance of the cork.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, it's like the beer producers, for years you don't put good beer in cans. I mean, God, now they're all the beer producers are.
We can. And speaking to that, is the first ever international canned wine competition. It's going to be held on July 24th at the Mendocino County Fairgrounds in Boonville. Competition will include various categories of canned wines, which have been gaining market share, as I mentioned, 45% since they were first launched in the early 2000s by the family Coppola. Remember the Sofia sparkling wine we tasted on the air? Well, you know, that's not quite accurate. Canned wine has been around since the 1930s. It's been around for 75, 80 years, but it's really just kind of started getting traction in the past 6-8 years.
I mean, it's a perfectly great container, isn't it, for wine?
For short term, if you're going to drink it short term, what's the problem? I mean, I wouldn't want to drink, you know, first gross out of the can, but, you know, it's perfectly acceptable, especially for white wines. The issue is the quality in them, because Gus Weed, one of my colleagues and our tasting coordinator, sort of specializes in our can and box wine coverage. Oh. He's written a couple stories about it, and I've tasted a fair amount of them with that process. And some of them are tasty, and some of them are just sort of like, ugh. Mm.
So that has nothing to do with the can itself. No, it has to do with the wine that's put in.
Well, I don't taste them right out of the can, so I taste.
You put them in a glass.
Yeah, I taste everything blind, so I don't taste them. I'm not sure if I drank it from a can. If just the whole idea,
of slugging,
it would taste canned.
Yeah.
So Alan Green is putting this competition on. Alan was the owner winemaker for Greenwood Ridge up in Mendocino County. He made great Pinots and Rieslings. Yeah. He retired a while ago. But I didn't realize that Alan was the one that's been putting on the Mendocino wine competition since 1979. So he's got 40 years of putting on wine competitions. So he knows what he's doing. And we talked yesterday for quite a while about canned wines.
So let me ask you a question. So in that idea of packaging, the idea of having wines on tap has become increasingly popular in restaurants and things like that. I don't know whether it's penetrated the home market. Do you approve?
I do. I mean, I drink a fair amount of it just by the glass at restaurants. And they're typically people who know what they're doing and just put some wine on and tap, you know. It typically won't be a really significant important wine, but it will be like one of their best food-friendly, fairly inexpensive wines. And I taste no difference myself. I mean, I'd rather have that than have a glass of wine from a bottle that's been open a couple days. Mm-hmm.
Alan told me that just what you had sent, John, millennials are driving this category of canned wines. And they have, so far, over 150 entries into this competition. That's a lot.
When is the competition?
It is July 24th up at the Mendocino Fairgrounds up in Boonville.
So can we go?
No, you can. It's not open to the public. It's a competition. Okay. So, but around the pool, hiking, going to the beach. I mean, think about all the applications where you don't want to schlep a bottle. You'd rather something that's not
or a cork.
Yeah, plus it...
Or a glass.
I think it's better. Well, I don't know if it's better for the environment, but probably...
So they're going to have a couple panels of judges, of three judges each. They're going to gauge the varietal, the entries. And then they're having a consumer panel that'll judge the sparklers and the coolers.
Would you be sure to have him send us results?
He's going to not only send us, but also join us for a telephone interview about the results of the competition, what the biggest surprises were. And he told me he's had quite a lot of really good canned wines recently. The category's really amping up. And here's a sidelight that I thought was really interesting. Alan mentioned that he is in the Guinness Book of Records, of World Records. Alan Green started collecting wine cans in 1980, he has the largest collection of wine cans in the world, according to Guinness. And he said, I've got the framed certificate on my wall to prove it. Over 1,100 different canned wines from around the world in his collection. Don't you think that's... And he said, I've got a lot to do within my retirement. Right. So he's chosen
dusting all those cans.
And I said, so do you have a lot of unusual ones? He said, I've got some from the 1930s that were packed in the 1930s from California. And he said, I have some real oddballs in my collection, like port in cans. Lots of white port was put in cans, Angelica and Muscatel. Mm. So these were, but.
So they have, those have kind of a.
Dark
reputation.
In a dark alley.
Yes, exactly.
Where you're ghostly. Yeah. But I think he's going to do a lot to rehabilitate this category. Mm. And I wouldn't be surprised. I asked him, I said, there's never been a public tasting yet. He said, not yet. But we're talking now. I bet within a few years, you're going to see, as millennials take over this category, you're going to see a public canned wine competition and public tasting. We won't be surprised to see that, will we?
No. I would hope that they don't charge a lot to get into that public tasting. But.
And when we come back, I want to ask him about aging wine in like tequila barrels and bourbon barrels and things like that. Chef John Ash and Steve Garner in the KS Arto Kitchen this morning.
Petaluma hears FM News Talk KSRO on Crystal Clear FM at 94.5.
Come to the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, voted Best Farmers Market. You'll find garden starts, the best produce this season from Singing Frogs, Bernier, Armstrong Valley, and Lantern Farm. The Beet Generation has a large selection of fresh-made pasta, savor farm fresh eggs, delicious cheeses, and fresh fruit, apricots, peaches, nectarines, strawberries, and cherries. Discover quality beef, pork, lamb, and duck. Anna's Fresh Seafood, and Franco's Freshly Made Sausages. The best choices of food vendors, the Greengrocer's Farm Fresh Menu, Lata's Indian Cuisine is returned with their exotic dishes, and Ellie's Kitchen provides fabulous homemade Mexican food. Santa Rosa's original certified farmer's market at the Luther Burbank Center for the Arts is open year-round, Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 to 1 p.m. Thank you, Sonoma County, for voting them number one. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmer's Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
Hey, Sonoma County. Thank you for making Creams Towing the number one rated heavy-duty towing company in Sonoma County. Creams Heavy Duty Towing has the largest fleet of medium and heavy-duty rigs in Sonoma County, and have been around since the 70s. So they're doing something right. Creams Heavy Duty Towing is on the road 24/7. Got a big rig stuck or need a four-wheel drive tow truck? Creams has the knowledge and experience to tow any and all large trucks. Their goal is to get you back on the road and home safe in the shortest amount of time. Need an RV towed? You guessed it. Creams Heavy Duty Towing can do that too. Their Class A drivers are fully insured and certified in heavy duty towing. Don't scream. Call Creams, 707-588-1250. Creams Heavy Duty Towing, 588-1250.
We're here with Art Nybrief, a leading long-term care planning specialist in Northern California, talking about the top three misconceptions when it comes to long-term care planning. Art, what's the first misconception?
That health insurance pays for long-term care. Unfortunately, it does not. It pays for up to 100 days of skilled recovery after one has been in the hospital a minimum of 3 days, but it never covers long-term care.
What can people do to get it covered?
Call me. I love helping people. It's an honor when people trust me enough to share their health information with me so that I can help them. I'm excited that each day I get to leave people in a better place.
Call Art at 707-974-8282. Online, it's artforltc.com.
The availability of this coverage is based upon one's health. Hoping you'll never need care is a desire, not a plan. Call me and I'll help you create a plan.
Arthur Nybrief, California Insurance License Number OC22076.
It's time to get ready for summer, and Be La Vie on Main Street in Pine Grove is a great place to start. Now you can save on those summer selfies at MySonomaDeals.com. Get Be La Vie's double shot teeth whitening service or two sunless tan sessions at half the usual price. Summer, here we come. Find this and other amazing summer deals only at MySonomaDeals.com. That's MySonomaDeals.com.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
Tim Fish, senior writer, editor for the Wine Spectator, joining Steve, that's me, and Chef John Ash in the KS Arto Kitchen today. The distilled products category has just exploded, hasn't it?
Right.
Yeah. Every week it seems like a new distillery is opening near your house. Mm. Well, Beringer Brothers has added a wine to its lineup, a Sauvignon Blanc aged in tequila barrels. New bottles in addition to its offerings of Chardonnay Cab and a red blend aged in bourbon barrel. So have you tasted any of these? Do you cover that in the Spectator?
I've tasted a few. I think I tasted a couple Zinfandels that did them in bourbon barrels. And that seems to be the closest that makes sense to me, considering the old American oak they used to use. It didn't do a lot for me. It just tasted like it had a lot of overly toasty, slightly different sort of oak on it. And I asked around and talked to some people who make it, and it's like their target audience is not necessarily devoted wine drinkers. Their target audience are devoted cocktail drinkers who want to have a wine that will help them bridge a gap there.
Okay.
So I didn't realize that, but it makes sense when you think about it.
Well, they're spending a lot of money doing marketing surveys and all this. And of course, my initial response is gimmick. But they're not targeting it to me, just what you had said to him. I didn't think it that way, as a bridge between the cocktail drinkers and the would-be wine drinkers.
Well, I noticed at Russian River Brewery, I was there last weekend, and they have a beer that's aged in Sauvignon Blanc oak. So, you know, as everyone's trying new things.
I mean,
I applaud creativity. I don't necessarily always have to drink it.
So what's your next article in The Spectator going to be about?
Oh, my goodness. I'm sort of in the quiet period. Our end of June and July is sort of like hits us in a certain place where our publishing slows down. A lot of us go on vacation. I'm working on a story about Tablas Creek down in Paso Robles.
That's Robert Haas, isn't it?
Yeah. And they're connected to Bocastel, and they've shipped, for years, they've brought in all the Bud Wood from Bocastel, and it's like their anniversary, 30 years, and their wines just keep getting better. And what's interesting about them is they're different. Their Syrahs, their blends don't taste like a lot of others. They have a little bit more of a French quality. So I'm heading down there in a couple weeks. And then in August, I'm heading to Oregon. I haven't been up there for about 6 months or so, and trying to catch everybody before the craze of harvest and things like that. And I'm we've had some retirements, Harvey Simon and Jim Lobby.
Which is unbelievable.
Right,
they were such fixtures.
Yeah, exactly. So I have to step in and do a lot of more things like columns and things like that. So,
well, why don't we continue our conversation in November, December?
That sounds great.
Okay.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming in, Tim. And next week, we will spend time in the Jerusalem and Israeli kitchen, John.
I can't wait.
It should be a lot of fun. From the chefs from Honey and Company in London, they'll be coming up from San Francisco to sit in with John and me. Have a great afternoon. Keep listening. Clark Wolf at the table and on the road with Jeff Davis and some wine talk. This is KSRO.